Zella made a beat, so it's goat time.
Welcome back, Grizz Nation, to another edition of the Core 4 Podcast, a podcast on the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, alongside the 3&D Podcast, GBB Live, and the Starting 5 Podcast. Make sure you're liking, subscribing, downloading, whatever you got to do for the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your coverage. And GBB is a blog under SB Nation. You can find it on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SB and Grizzlies. I'm your host, Parker Fleming, and with me is none other than the ray of sunshine himself, Nathan Chester. Nate, what's up?
I'm doing good, Parker. We've known each other for several years at this point, I think for about 4 years now. And without the ray of sunshine, a positivity that I bring to your life, I don't know what you'd be doing without me, to be honest.
You know, you're such a ray of sunshine that I don't think you could contain your excitement the other day when the Tigers won the NIT. You're just like, these guys look happy. Kudos to them. I'm like, riveting. That is just absolutely riveting.
For all the jokes about how negative of a sports fan I am, Sunday was really the first time where I was wondering if something's wrong with me because you go and look at my tweets after that moment compared to everybody else, and it's like at least three different tiers of excitement. Everybody's like, yes, NIT, the Tigers, they improved, they got better. And then there's me over there sitting and thinking, should a coach get credit for turning around a season that should have never have had to have been turned around in the first place? And I'm not looking to do a postmortem on this last season for the Memphis Tigers and Penny Hardaway this year. But, Parker, is there something wrong with me? I just wired the wrong way when it comes to being a sports fan?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I'm not even a Tigers fan, and I was happy for them. You know, I'm happy to see guys like Lester Quinones look like kind of an NBA player. And I'm just really excited because, you know, a lot of people had these like one and done or maybe two and done expectations on the 2019 recruiting class, even the guys aside from Precious and James Wiseman. But I think it's going to be a blessing in disguise because they're going to end up getting that experience and they can I've seen the past couple of years, a lot of the better teams in college basketball are teams that have experience. They're talented plus have experience. And I just think having guys like Lester, DJ, Landers, I think having that experience for Musa is going to be big, especially since he was a reclassified freshman, should have technically been a senior in high school this year. I think that experience would be good for him as well. And then they also have a couple really talented prospects. I think Camden Nesbitt was a guy that came in January, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Y'all got to bear with me. I'm not a Tiger guy, but I try to pay attention for my listeners. And then they got another guy that's supposed to be kind of like one of the high risers of the 2021 class. Josh
Minot. Yeah.
Minot. Yeah.
They also got a guy who's coming with Camden. And this is going to sound really bad. I actually was talking to someone about him the other day, and I called him AO DeSunamo, who is the point guard for Illinois that's going to be in the NBA draft this coming year. But he's been living with Camden for the last couple of years, and he will be on the team next year. Look, there's a lot to be positive about. I think you can take this NIT title and say Penny is finally rounding it in the right direction. They're heading to where they need to go, even though there's not a lot of precedent over the last 10 to 15 years that winning an NIT title really changes the fortunes of your program. Now, in Memphis for the last 20 years, that has been a positive sign. It happened for Cal. It happened for Pastner. They both rattled off long, several years in a row of making the tournament after they made the NIT title. I'm proud of those guys. They've had to rally through a lot. DJ Jeffries had a very disappointing season. He was really able to rally through and start to round into the player that many thought he could be by the end of his second season. I'm slowly inching my way toward Lester Quinones, NBA player island. Really, for most of the year, in the last 2 years, he just didn't look like that caliber of an athlete to be able to play at that level. But I've kind of reached a point with him, and you saw it with, I think he had 31 rebounds over the last two games in the NIT. Older, experienced guys who are bad at nothing generally find a way, can carve out a role in the NBA. If you're good at most things or at a little bit of everything, the way that Lester Quinones is, I think he can find a place in the league. And I don't know what level that's going to be, whether that's as a rotation player or a two-way player or whatever it might be, but I could definitely see that. My concerns about Penny Hardaway are still there. They still finished outside the top 300 in offense. They were still one of the worst turnover teams in the country. And those things really have not improved in the 3 years that he's been the coach of the Tigers. And I don't really expect that to just magically turn around in year four. And it's the things that are keeping them from being a consistent tournament contender. They were right on the line of making the tournament this year. Maybe next year, if most of the guys come back along with the new faces they added, they'll be able to cross that line and become a periphery NCAA tournament team who could maybe rattle off a run. But until he finds some way to address those issues that are holding the program back, I don't see a sizable leap happening. And I think there's a very real possibility that you're going to get to next year. He brings most of these guys back. He adds some new faces, and the Tigers seem to be underachieving again, even if they are a tournament team. And people will be shaking their head as to why that is the case, when all the evidence for why that's happening has been right in front of their face the entire time. So there's reason for cautious optimism, but consider me still a skeptic going into year four.
Nate the Skeptic Chester is just a evergreen nickname that has lived on for the past 4-5 years, probably all of his sports life. But let's transition to what people actually listen to us about. That's Grizzlies basketball. We're sticking with the same theme here of patience. And I know Nate's got something cooking on Grizzly Bear Blues for this week. Still hasn't told me when that's going live yet.
Tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to talk about Justice Winslow. He is close to the 15-game threshold. He's not quite yet at Joe Mullinax's 400-minute threshold for a take. He's currently played 16 games, has totaled 337 minutes. And, you know, Nate, I just want patience for Justice Winslow. That's all I want.
But why do you want patience, Parker?
Because it is a little bit of an investment. Because the Grizzlies, they see him as a guy that could be another complimentary piece to the core of Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. Is he going to be a third guy? No. But I know his shooting struggles kind of masqueraded what he's looked like so far, and it's kind of left the strongest impression of his first impression as a Grizzly. I mean, I remember he had a game, I want to say it was the last home game. It was either one of the Warriors games or the Celtics game. You know, he had like three really good scoring possessions, and he's made some nice reads as well. But the only thing people talked about was a badly missed three. Granted, whenever an NBA player hits the side of the backboard, most people clown. Ask Paul George.
He earned a whole nickname for that. Off one shot, got a whole nickname. Way off.
Yep, way off P. Mm-hmm. Pandemic P. All right, but it's kind of just left this giant impression of what Justice Winslow's looked like thus far as the Memphis Grizzly. But I mean, I've kind of just stuck with the take of just take the flashes that you're seeing this year, but just give him an off season to where he's not actually just rehabbing the entire off season. He can actually work on his game, work on his conditioning, because he looks healthy, but rusty. This isn't Chandler Parsons. He's actually impacting the game in other areas. His shot's just not off. And I think you're seeing the impact of, one, a pandemic season without much practice time, and two, a guy that didn't really get an offseason to work on his game. He spent the majority of his offseason having to rehab. So that's where I stand on Justice Winslow. I've seen good flashes, but Let's wait until he can get a fully healthy offseason to work on his game, get his jumper back going. So, I mean, granted, shooting's never really been a focal part of his game, but in his last two healthy seasons in Miami, the 2017-18 season, 2018-19 season, he shot about 38% from three. Mm-hmm. That's solid. That is above average, or like slightly above average.
Yeah. So
I just want to see what he can do with an entire offseason to work with.
Yeah, and the Grizzlies are absolutely going to pick up his team option. He'll be on the team next year. Look, there are two perspectives for Justice Winslow. There's yours, which is like, all right, he doesn't look great offensively right now. But like you said, pandemic, he has not played a game of basketball in over 400 days before he played his first game as a Grizzly this year. Let's let him get a full offseason and rehab. I fully agree with that. And the Grizzlies are going to do that regardless. I think the other and opposite perspective is you see the fact that he's shooting 12% from three, which there are two things I'll say about that. First off, I think shooting 12% from three over a 16-game sample size would be unreasonably bad if he was missing an arm and a leg. Like, I don't care how long you've been out of basketball. I think that is pretty unreasonably bad. But by the same token, he shot 38% from three in Miami 2 years ago. I think that was kind of a mirage. He'll probably never shoot that well from beyond the arc again in his NBA career, in my opinion. But it also shows that it is literally not possible for him to continue to shoot the ball this badly. There's no way he will continue to shoot 12% from three. So he looks very, very rusty. And I'm making this point where I compared him to Chandler Parsons in the piece that I'm writing about him, not in the sense that their circumstances are similar. Parsons got signed to a 4-year max deal to come in and be a third star next to Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. And when that didn't work out, the Grizzlies were essentially screwed over. They didn't have the cap space over the next several summers to really be able to do anything meaningful to truly improve the roster. And he was broken. Justice Winslow, the Grizzlies sent out two veterans and Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill, who are not a part of their future plans, to basically take a flyer, to take a low-risk, high-reward investment in a guy who could hopefully be a part of their core going forward. And obviously, judging by the comments of Zach Kleiman and other members of the front office, they still hope that Justice Winslow can be that. And I hope he can be, too. Their circumstances are totally different. But over these 16 games, Chandler Parsons played 34 games in his first season in 2017 with Memphis. Winslow is trailing him in almost every single shooting category, and he trails him in every single advanced stat. Now, context is important. Parsons, like you said earlier today, looked broken. He looked like an absolute albatross out on the court. Winslow is struggling terribly on offense, especially with shooting the ball, but he looks fine. Like, don't you agree with me? Like, he looks fine with the way that he moves with the ball in his hands. He's been a plus defender when he's on the court. He's bringing value in other ways that a Chandler Parsons could not back when he was on the court. And that's encouraging going forward, that you think, oh, when Winslow was in the lab all summer working on his game, trying to get more comfortable again, the offensive game will start to round itself together, even if he's never quite what he was 2 years ago in Miami. I think he's going to turn out just okay. I don't know. I'm not willing to say whether the Grizzlies will extend him after the 2021-2022 season, because there's so much uncertainty, plus there are possible trades and free agency acquisitions the Grizzlies would like to make. Here's the thing that does scare me as far as the future and Justice Winslow. Pretty much guys who have been out of the NBA for as long as he has before getting back in uniform for the Grizzlies this year, so give or take over 400 days around that time. Generally speaking, what I found through my research is that guys who were stars or superstars who missed that amount of time, they were able to come back at a comparable level of play to what they were doing before, even if they were not quite as impactful as they used to be. Justice Winslow is not a star. However, most of the role players that I discovered who missed that amount of time were out of the league within a couple of years. Wesley Matthews missed nearly that amount of time after his torn Achilles. He was able to come back, and even now he's a peripheral rotation player, but he was never quite what he was again, and he was probably on the high end of the spectrum. So the odds, I would say, historically are against Winslow being just the player that he was a couple of years ago in Miami. But like we've already talked about, there have been encouraging signs to know there's nothing physically wrong with him, or there appears to be nothing physically wrong with him, which should bode well for not only his future with the Grizzlies, but his future in the NBA. So there's some give and take here. I fall somewhere in the middle. There's a positive slant. There's a negative slant. I want to see him be able to work it all out and be the player the Grizzlies thought they were getting when they traded for him back in February 2020. But you got to take the wait and see approach, like you and I both agree on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he looks good defensively. He's made some good reads as a secondary playmaker. And he's even made a lot of like, oh, wow plays where it's like, I remember the first game he played, he took Jay Crowder to the high post, hit him with one dribble and a spin move to the basket for a layup. Most people after a hip injury that sidelined them for 7 months, they don't really move like that. Mm-hmm. So that was an encouraging sign. He's not afraid to take it to the goal. I mean, we've seen him in transition go up against like 2-3 guys for a layup. And at least it's almost like he's not playing scared, if that's the best way to put it. Like you've seen like a lot of guys, they come back from injury and they play scared because they don't want to re-injure themselves. They don't make the same cuts that they used to. They don't make the same drives that they used to. Like as we saw with like guys like Chandler Parsons, to name an example. But I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's had flashes, and that's really all you got to take and see at this point. And I know the shooting's rough, but I had said on Twitter, I've tested this take out with a few people. If he can be like the bench player version of Jimmy Butler, that's what the Grizzlies really need, at least right now. A guy that's going to do more of his damage inside the arc, because Jimmy Butler does get the freest pass in the world for being a sub 25% 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. Be a vocal leader off the bench, be a primary-ish playmaker. The thing is, with Tyus Jones off the bench, he's not going to get many of those opportunities. But if he could be the quality of a primary playmaker, but be more of a secondary playmaker, that's good. And be able to defend positions 1-4. Mm-hmm. Just take what you can. Like, that's what you need this season. And I think that's a win. I think we're close to seeing about that. I mean, his outside shot, he struggled, and it's impacted most of his numbers, shooting numbers, advanced numbers, whole nine yards. But from the eye test standpoint, I'm pretty good with what I've seen with Justice Winslow right now. I will say, though, the returns on him playing back-to-backs don't look good. I mean,
he may not be physically ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Against Utah, he went 0 of 7 from the field. He did have 3 steals. So, see, you take the positive view of the game. So, he had 3 steals, but still his offensive game wasn't there. But then again, in that back-to-back game against Utah, it didn't really look like anybody really had much of a game.
Yeah.
And then you look at the Golden State game. He had 8 rebounds, but he was 2-9 from the field, 0-5 from 3. And it was a minus 17 in a game that they won by 8. So I would still hold off on back-to-backs right now. That's the only thing I could take away is in like a negative light. It's just, I don't want to see him play back-to-backs right now.
Yeah. So we can take Kleiman's comments, and the front office is obviously very invested in Winslow's success. And this is something that we've alluded to on the show in the past, but I'm just going to be forthright with stating it now. I think Tyus Jones's time in Memphis is numbered. It won't surprise me if he plays through to the end of next season with Memphis, but I do not think he will be in the Grizzlies uniform past the I don't think he'll be in a Grizzlies uniform on opening night of the 2021-2022 season. And there's a couple reasons for that. First and foremost is how many all-star or superstar point guards have really prominent backup point guards who play consistent prominent minutes each night in recent NBA history? You can say Sean Livingston with Steph Curry, but really outside of that, there's not a long list of those types of guys. At some point, you kind of got to cut Ja Morant loose. And to the Grizzlies' credit and Taylor Jenkins' credit, they've kind of been doing that. Ja's minutes have really ticked up over the last 10 to 15 games. And I don't think that's just because they're cutting Ja loose, as it also is, Tyus has not been very good for a while. He takes care of the basketball, which is, he's led the league for basically 100 years now, an assist to turnover ratio. It's his best quality that he is an effective distributor. He gets everybody in the spaces they need to be in. But when you look at the talent that the Grizzlies have coming off the bench, you would like to see De'Anthony Melton grow more as a primary playmaker. And relating this back to Justice Winslow, Parker, let me ask you this. When did Justice Winslow have his greatest success in the NBA? Or what position was he playing when that happened?
It was when Goran Dragic got hurt in the 2018-19 season, opening up a window for Winslow to play point guard.
Yeah, so his best basketball of his career came over a 2 to 3 month stretch where he was basically playing point guard for Miami and he was being a primary playmaker. There's never going to be that much opportunity in Memphis with Ja, among others on the roster, for him to do that. But if the front office is looking to empower Justice to be all that he can be, and he looks healthy, he looks good going into next season, maybe you explore moving Tyus Jones. And if Kyle Anderson is still on the roster, you could have backup point guard be run by committee with De'Anthony Melton, Justice Winslow, and Kyle Anderson. I want to see Winslow have more opportunity to have the ball in his hands and to make plays with the balls in it, with the ball in his hands, because he really has not quite been empowered to do that just yet as a member of the Grizzlies. And it may help him get into a better rhythm offensively to have the ball in his hands more.
Yeah, for sure. And also, too, you're not even counting the possibility of the 2021 draft pick being eased in off the bench and you have him handling that responsibility by committee, because I think we both kind of have the assumption that they'll use that spot to draft a wing, that and most of these wings are good secondary playmaker-ish. I think the only one that doesn't really fit that mold, but will also more than likely be in a starting lineup would be a guy like Corey Kispert. But that's beside my point. I'm going to go ahead and move on to one other thing that we want to preach patience with, and that I'm glad the Grizzlies were patient with, and that is the trade deadline this past week. The Grizzlies did not deal Gorgui Dieng. They just waived him, and then on Sunday he signed with the San Antonio Spurs. Nate, just like real quick, what were your thoughts on the trade deadline before I get into my little spiel here?
Well, if there was a potential deal where they could move Gorgui Dieng and free up cap space for another team going into next summer and get a couple of second round picks or a second round pick out of it, I'm sure they would have done it. That deal was obviously not available to them, so they just decided to waive him and let him choose his own destiny. And he'll have a good role in San Antonio. San Antonio may get better as because of it, because Gorgui Dieng is better than LaMarcus Aldridge point in his career. So I think he'll help him in that way. You and I disagree with this, and it's not something I feel very strongly about, but I think it is something that's kind of worth mentioning. So Evan Fournier, who
you're going to bring this up.
In his Celtics, yep, I knew you knew I would. In his Celtics debut last night, he had 0 points on 0-10 shooting. Knowing how Celtics fans are, I'm sure there weren't many nice words to say. Yeah. But so he was traded to the Celtics. They just used their trade exception, which was pretty comparable to Gorgui Dieng's salary for this season. He's making $17 million a year. And they sent 2 second-round picks to be able to get him. There's a part of me that wishes the Grizzlies had offered Dieng to Orlando and a couple of second-round picks to get Evan Fournier in a Grizzlies uniform. He's averaging 19 points a game. He would instantly improve their shooting, their shot creation, and he would slot right in as their starting shooting guard. And he would be a big help for the Grizzlies this year, even if he walks for nothing at the end of this summer, because at the end of the day, you were giving away Gorgui Dieng, who was not going to be a part of your long-term plans, and you would have given away 2 second-round picks, which second-round picks at the end of the day are a pretty meaningless asset. You can buy them from a team on draft night if you really want them. So Evan Fournier doesn't change the fortunes of the franchise in any way, but if you have a way to improve your roster, to improve your chances of playoff contention in the present without sacrificing any long-term assets, I think Evan Fournier fit that bill. And I understand the Grizzlies want to continue to evaluate their younger wings and the younger guards, but I question how much more need there is for evaluation when it comes to them. I think you have a good feel for Desmond Bane, that he's going to be a part of the core moving forward. Grayson Allen, I think you got a good feel on him. De'Anthony Melton is probably the one piece that would be hurt in that trade, and he probably shouldn't, because really I think if Fournier came, you would either find a trade for Grayson Allen or move him out of the rotation entirely. Taylor Jenkins, I think, would be hard-pressed against doing that, but I feel like Melton would be the odd man out, and that would probably be the greatest argument against trading for Evan Fournier, not really for any real reason outside of what the coaching staff is stubbornly choosing to do by prioritizing Allen's minutes over Melton. But with all that being said, I think you got a good feel going forward in a season where you're supposed to be evaluating the younger pieces on the roster. I think they've generally done a good job of that. They have a good feel for those players. So if you can find someone like Fournier that you can slot and improve the team, you can do that. Again, I don't feel super strongly about it, but that was a thought I had back at the trade deadline.
Well, for what it's worth, I don't think it was one of those things where that's all that it took to get Fournier and that the Grizzlies could have made a better offer. Yeah, like Gorgie Dang in 2 seconds, in theory, trumps Evan Fournier for 2 seconds. But that trade wasn't – the reason why Orlando made that specific trade with Boston was, I mean, yeah, the assets, but also, too, they generated a hefty trade exception themselves. So they generated a $17 million trade exception in that trade. So – with the way that Orlando is currently constructed, they can use part of that trade exception to absorb another player's contract, take on their money, and get another asset attached to it, kind of like how the what the Grizzlies did in the Mike Conley trade and use that trade exception to get Andre Iguodala's contract, plus that very, very valuable first-round pick from the Golden State Warriors when Steph Curry's 36, Klay Thompson's 34, and Draymond Green's 34. Besides the point, though, I think that was more about of the asset for the Orlando Magic that they were getting with the trade exception. As we saw with what they did with Jeff Teague, they would have just waived Gorgie Dang anyway, so they might as well generate the trade exception to potentially use as another way to get an asset. But I'm honestly fine with what the Grizzlies did, because we've seen a very cautionary tale of what it's like when you lose all the leverage in the world and you make it very known that you want to get value for a certain player, when all it took for the Miami Heat to get Victor Oladipo was Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and a pick swap. Because they were forced. They were like, Pat Riley was like, well, you're going to trade him and he's interested in us. You want this guy, and they were talking about Duncan Robinson. They wanted Duncan Robinson, but Pat Riley knew you're going to trade him and you're going to take this offer. And now they turned James Harden into Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, Radonis Kukoros. I can't pronounce it. I don't really care to either. He kind of sucks. And Dante Exum, 4 first-round picks, 4 pick swaps. When they could have just taken Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. But besides the point, I think what the Grizzlies did was a good idea. They didn't get the offer that they wanted for Gorgie Dang, and they rewarded him for his professionalism throughout the entire process and let him go to a team of his choosing. That's totally fine. I think more than likely something you could have seen within the NBA trade circles was I predicted a 3-team trade, but you could have easily also seen where other teams would look at Gorgie Dang and say, okay, you didn't play this guy at all. You aren't playing this guy. He's not in your plans. If you really want to give him to us, you got to give us a sweetener to take on his contract. You could have seen something like that. And honestly, for the Grizzlies at this stage, whether it's a player, whether it's a pick, it's not worth it. And so that's where I am on it. They did the right thing. There weren't really any rotation players that they should have moved anyways. They've all played pretty well in their roles. They're a 500 team without Jaren Jackson Jr. in the lineup. It's all good. And now going forward, they're going to roll into this offseason and the 2021-2022 season with between $55 million and $65 million in expiring contracts. I say that $65 million because that's counting Jaren Jackson Jr. if they wait until restricted free agency to agree to a deal. But what they did now is going to be better for the future in terms of asset management.
I think the Grizzlies are in kind of a weird spot when you're kind of caught between, okay, we want to be as good as we possibly can with the horses that we have. And so we're trying to contend for a playoff spot at the moment, but also this season's not a huge priority. We're going to do absolutely nothing splashy whatsoever to try to improve the roster. And when you look around the league, when the fans look around the league and these other teams are making these spicy deals that may hurt their long-term flexibility, I'm looking at you, Portland. I did not understand that trade. You want to maximize the window that Damian Lillard has, and you're willing to give up somebody in Gary Trent Jr. who could become a great player in the future. You traded a good young player for a great older player that you're going to have to pay this summer. I respect it. I respect their willingness to try to maximize that window for Damian Lillard. But you see teams like Portland making those types of moves, and I understand how it can be frustrating to watch all of that go down while the Grizzlies just kind of sit on their thumbs and say, this season was not about contending. Even if we may, there's a chance we could still end up making the playoffs. I understand how the clash of identities, the clash of visions in that way can be frustrating, but I'm with you on it. At the end of the day, there is no need to do anything that's insanely out there to make this team more than what it is. Jaren Jackson Jr., like, I don't know how impactful it will be to bring him back with less than a month left in the season, because I think he'll have his own rust to shake off. And I think that's pretty late in the season to be disrupting rotations and chemistry. But if you want to point to a midseason acquisition for the Grizzlies, that will be the one. That will be the one that can take the team to a new tier if they are going to do that. So if you're looking for something big, if you're looking for a big fish, look to the return of Jaren Jackson Jr. by the end of April.
Yep, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that closer to it, but we're about running on time here. Let's close with this, our predictions on this next game against the Utah Jazz. Nate, fire it away.
The Grizzlies will lose by double digits. They could play this Utah team 15 times in their current state, and they will not beat them a single time. Baddish to mediocre teams beat great teams all the time in the NBA. But Utah is not just the best team in the NBA this year, and the Grizzlies are a very mediocre one. Utah is a horrible matchup for them and their current form right now. And as much as it pains me to admit it, Parker, it's so, so painful for me to admit it. It pretty much all comes down to Rudy Gobert. The Grizzlies like to attack the paint. They like to get to the rim. Rudy Gobert is one of the very best in NBA history at keeping teams from the rim. And also the Grizzlies just really have no answer for him in the pick and roll. Jonas Valanciunas, it's not where his strength is. Brandon Clark coming off the bench, he's just too small. So really Utah's two of their greatest strengths address the Grizzlies' greatest weakness. And that uniquely makes them a very terrible matchup for Memphis. So I do not see the Grizzlies winning on Wednesday.
Gotcha. We love the positivity there. So my prediction will be that I'm not going to say a win or a loss, but I'm going to say that the Grizzlies are going to do a better job of containing Donovan Mitchell in this game. Over the past weekend, Donovan Mitchell went a scorching 13 for 19 each on Dylan Brooks and Brandon Clark, 4-13 against Kyle Anderson, 1-12 against defensive stalwart Grayson Allen, 10-11 against Desmond Bane, and 4-7 against John Morant, 3-3 against Jonas Valanciunas. I didn't want to look at any other ones because it's below like a 3 field goal threshold. But nonetheless, Donovan Mitchell torched the Grizzlies this past weekend. I just think they're going to do a better job. Is it going to lead to a win? I don't know, because they have Rudy Gobert. They have Mike Conley. They have Bojan Bogdanovic, Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, Royce O'Neal. So, and knowing the Grizzlies' luck, it'll probably be like George's Niang that goes off for the for Utah and takes them to a win. But I'm just going to keep it to, I think they'll do a better job of containing Donovan Mitchell.
I think they will, and that's a pretty bold prediction, considering they'll have to do very little to do that.
We'll see. But, Nate, do you have any final thoughts before we close the show?
Positivity reigns.
You continue to get defeated by negativity, but yeah, it's all good. Nate, let the people know where they can find you.
You can find me and all my negative Twitter takes on Twitter at NathanChester24. And you can find all my Grizzlies related content at GrizzlyBearBlues.com.
For sure. And like I said last podcast, do not be afraid to dunk on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He probably deserves it.
Almost and always.
You can find me on Twitter at Paca_Flocka. Read my work at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter at the Core 4 Podcast with the number 4, not the word 4. Follow the blog at the SB and Grizzlies. And make sure you're liking, subscribing, downloading to the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast. And make sure you are listening to every episode of GBB Live, the Core 4 Podcast, 3&D Podcast, and the Starting 5 Podcast. Leave a 5-star review, an astounding review. You can even roast Nate in the reviews. Roast the 3&D host, Justin Lewis, as well. He probably deserves it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate, have the honors.
That's all, folks.